By the 1910s, Percival Lowell's vision of a utopian Martian society began to collapse under the weight of skeptical science. His photographs and theories faced brutal ridicule, and his reputation never really recovered. Yet, the fever he ignited has never really died. One of Lowell's dreams and his failures was born an entirely new way of storytelling, the genre of science fiction. We touched on that briefly last hour, from pulp magazines to the foundations of modern space exploration. The Martians may have been a mirage, but the imagination they sparked reshaped culture forever. Tonight with David Barron, we explore how one man's obsession with canals on Mars changed the way that humanity dreams of the stars. And joining us now on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline is David Barron, author, journalist, broadcaster, and public speaker who writes about astronomy and other sciences. His latest book, The Martians, The True Story of the Alien Craze That Captured Turn-of-the-Century America, was published in August of 2025. It's out and available now. Remember, don't just buy the book, rate and review the book. David, thank you for being here again for the next hour.
Glad to be here, Dave.
It is funny how our heroes fall, right? And we get excited, we fall into step with him, and even the church started, right? And again, that's news to me, because for so many years, it seemed that the church and science, when it came to life outside our planet, did not exist. And I know that it was Pope Benedict, I believe, or Pope France, Pope Benedict, I believe, right after Pope John Paul II, came out and said, it's no longer a sin to believe in life on other planets. As a matter of fact, if they come here, we'll baptize them in the name of Jesus. And he made it okay, which I thought was interesting, because for a religion that doesn't believe in life anywhere else, the Vatican has sunk an extraordinary amount of money into an observation and observatory and has been watching the skies and the heavens. And I don't think it's just for proof that God exists.
No, you raise a lot of good points there. Yeah, the Vatican has an observatory, quite a good one. And that was one of the things that surprised me when I was studying the Mars craze of the turn of the last century, which is the extent to which religion accepted it. I mean, because that's often been the assumption. Well, and that was the assumption of atheists at the time. There were atheists back in the early 1900s saying, aha, now that we've found life on Mars, that's going to make the religious Christians wriggle in their pulpits. But no, basically religious leaders were able to expand their ideas. And I quote in my book a Catholic priest saying, well, he believes that, you know, that God looks after the Martians just as he does look after the humans. There was excitement about asking the Martians what their creation story was. Did their original Martians, like Adam and Eve, behave so wickedly in whatever their Garden of Eden was? So I think, you know, it's amazing the extent to which we're able to kind of keep our own belief systems and incorporate new data as it comes in. And that was true of the Martians and religion back then.
You talked about in the first hour, you know, you look at something and, you know, basically Mars was pareidolia, a play of shadows, tricks of light. We want to see something. We want to believe that there's something beyond the life that's on this planet. It's exciting to consider these things, right? When you look at how fallible we are as a race and how easily we can be fooled, why are we so unforgiving then to the people that step forward first to throw out these theories, to give up these concepts and beliefs, and then revel in their failure?
That's an excellent question. And I think, so Percival Lowell, again, who was the main proponent of the idea that there was a canal-building civilization on Mars, I actually give him a lot of credit. He, in the 1890s, came up with a logical, coherent theory for the observations at the time. People were seeing these lines on Mars. They couldn't explain them. One explanation was there was a civilization there that was distributing its water through these irrigation canals. Where I fault him is that he kept pushing it. Even he was unwilling to see any evidence that ran counter to his belief system. And even as the evidence came in pretty well showing that these were optical illusions, he never was able to back down. He pushed it too far. But the remarkable thing is, when he died in 1916, and by then, he was pretty much seen as a crank. I mean, his theory fell apart among scientists by 1910 or so, but he never backed down. And he was portraying himself as this this persecuted genius who, when he died, would be seen how he was right all along. But when he did die, people didn't ridicule him. I mean, the obituaries in the newspapers praised him for having ignited imagination among the public, for getting people to dream of life in outer space and to imagine what else is out there. And, you know, we talked a little bit, and you mentioned again about science fiction. What you've probably heard of the Hugo Awards, the great literary awards in science fiction. They're named after Hugo Gernsback, who is considered the father of modern science fiction. He was an early science fiction writer and editor who had a bunch of magazines in the early 1900s. Hugo Gernsback wrote about the fact that he got into science fiction because, as a child, he read one of Percival Lowell's books about the canals on Mars. And he was just so excited about the possibility of this civilization on the planet next door that even as that theory died, his imagination kept going on. And imagination's really important. Why? What got us to go to the moon? What will eventually get us to go to Mars? It's not just rocket fuel and carbon fiber and the things that rockets are made out of. It's human imagination. What's out there? We want to discover. Sure, let's go to Mars. Let's eventually go to where those pyramids might have been and find what's really there. You know, that's what gets us to explore. And that's what Percival Lowell ignited. So again, my book is both a cautionary tale and kind of one that's inspiring in that we have to be careful not to push too far into beliefs that we're just kidding ourselves about. On the other hand, we should keep open minds. We don't know what's out there. And imagining what could be out there is what'll get us to figure out what really is out there. You know, I mean, I have no doubt that there is alien life. I have no doubt that there are alien civilizations. I have no idea if the aliens have come here. I've never seen a flying saucer. I've never had an encounter. I can't dismiss what other people have seen, but I have no doubt that there is alien life out there. And I would love in my lifetime for us to get some conclusive evidence of life, ideally civilized life elsewhere.
Isn't that funny though? What is conclusive evidence, right?
Yeah, right.
Percival Lowell, who sees things on a planet, he has what we refer to as faith, and he doesn't back down from his faith, and he is martyred over it, right? I mean, he's basically torn apart for quite a while. However, science is quick to destroy that, yet we can talk about a big being in the sky. And understand, folks, don't start with the hate mail. I'm not questioning the existence of God. I'm a Christian who grew up with that belief system and still maintain it to this day. But that's the ultimate faith, that something huge exists that created everything. And we have no physical proof of this. Well, sure we do. We have the Bible. Oh, you mean stories that were written years and hundreds of years after these things supposedly took place? But we can give full faith to that, but we can't give faith to a man who sees something beyond the normal and wants to embrace it and bring it to the public. We then categorize it as science fiction. It's just such a strange, weird world, the way we work and examine concepts and choose to believe what we want and back that up. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more David Barron after this. All right, David. So we're talking about faith and the concept that, hey, something exists, you know, and this is what's going on. I'd like to say that we as humanity have stepped up and evolved to the point where we're going to be more open about examining concepts. However, within the last, I think it was last 50 years, there was a scientist who went up in a symposium and he said, listen, ulcers are not what you think. They're not created by stress. They're not eating your stomach apart because you're all bound up. It's actually something we can treat with an antibiotic. He was laughed out of the symposium, right? Scoffed at, complete idiot. This guy's a moron. Career ruined. Oh, lo and behold, guess what we find out? Ulcers are caused by a bacteria that can be cleaned up with antibacterial, right, and antibiotics. And yet, those people don't get a chance to kind of recover their career and get the apologies that they should. It's always so fascinating to me how quickly we'll throw the baby out with the bathwater if it's something that doesn't appeal to the general public, even when it's proven that they were wrong.
Well, it's an interesting case. I'm forgetting the name of the scientist, but H. Right. pylori is the name of the bacterium.
Right.
In his case, I believe he's still alive. He's he may have even gotten a Nobel Prize, as I recall. I mean, so sometimes science does come around and say,
how did that speak to you? The guy got the Nobel Prize for it, but all we remember is this guy that was scoffed and laughed off the stage because he was an idiot who came up with this harebrained scheme.
Exactly. And again, that's why I do not fault Percival Lowell for coming up with his theory and promoting it and looking for evidence in favor of it. That's how science works. I mean, it takes sometimes bravery to go out there and propose something radically new. I mean, Albert Einstein, when his general theory of relativity was laughed at by a lot of folks early on. I mean, so again, skepticism of all sorts is a very good thing. We should be skeptical that sometimes these ideas harden in the scientific community and they're just wrong. And it takes a true revolutionary to come along and puncture it. As an undergraduate, I studied physics and geology. I've been a science journalist my whole career. I should just be straightforward. I believe in science. I believe that's not to say scientists can't be wrong. They absolutely can be. That's not to say science as in general science does get things wrong, but science as an enterprise is about eventually moving toward something that's hopefully true. And I think the true sign of science is that that it can turn corners, that it can self-correct. It sometimes takes a while, but I think science, again, we all need to be skeptical of others and also skeptical of ourselves about holding on to beliefs maybe that we want to be true, even if in the end they're not.
And you said, I wish we could have some definitive proof that this exists.
Right.
I often wonder what would definitive proof look like, because right now there's some pretty compelling proof that we are being visited that's going through Congress, and you're hearing from speakers, former military, former people with incredibly high top secret knowledge that are coming forward and saying, this is real. We can't define what we're dealing with. We know it's not of Earth. We have video footage of it now. We have these things. Now, I know there's a big portion of the world that's going to say, hey, this is conspiracy. They're showing us something with their left hand while the right hand's over here taking away our civil liberties and union, right? And that. So it almost dismisses the evidence that's coming. I mean, aside from it appearing in the sky over the entire planet at once, like in the movie Independence Day, what do you think definitive proof would look like? Does it have to be just that?
Yeah, no, that's an excellent question.
Do you hear that? Editor? How many excellent questions before I get a raise here? All right.
There are folks who study astrobiology, which is the fancy name for the field of looking for alien life, who talk about this very fact that, it's probably never going to be an absolute yes or no that, we have found alien life, we've found an alien civilization. No, it's going to be how strong is the evidence? And same with just last week, this NASA announcement about the possibility that there once was microbial life on Mars. Now NASA wants to get that rock from Mars back to Earth so we can study it here. Well, that would probably give us an even better idea, but still there will be questions. The Viking lander on Mars in 1976 had a test to look for life on Mars that ended up being that actually suggested there was life. But a lot of scientists then said, well, but it really could just be chemistry, not biology. So all of these things. Yeah, I think if a spacecraft lands on the lawn at the White House and the beings get out and they meet with Donald Trump, I think probably we'd be convinced, but then people would say, no, that's an AI created video, right? So yeah, that's a tough one. That's a really
Listen,
tough
people
one.
Have been begging for UFOs to land on the White House lawn for a century. What I think is fascinating is, I think it's 1955, there's a Life magazine with Marilyn Monroe on the cover. And a small little headline on the cover. But if you flip in there and you start scrolling through, there's an entire story about the UFOs that were sighted over Washington. Not one or two, but multiple UFOs. And it's part of Life magazine, not a magazine that is popularizing the fact that Elvis is an alien or Bigfoot, you know, is having my baby. This is a periodical that people love, trust, and believe in. And they were very open about the fact that, yes, we are being visited. There are saucers that were seen over Washington, D.C., that hovered over our state capital. Or, you know, I mean, that's so amazing to me. And people, unless you are guys like me, nobody really discusses that element. That it seems like even in the 40s and 50s, we were that much closer to believing and just accepting this than we are today. Now we're pushing things away. Back then, we didn't have the advent of CGI. We didn't have these things where trickery was so easily done. And people couldn't be as fooled. You saw what you saw. Thousands of people witnessed these craft. It's continued today. You've got military personnel on the Nimitz who witness on a regular basis these tic-tac-like craft going in and out of water, moving at unbelievable speeds and stopping on a dime, doing remarkable things, and then getting their ship boarded by, quote unquote, the men in black, right, who come in and then take all the footage. And these guys have come out in public and have talked about this openly. So but yet we're still decrying this as, you guys are wasting so much time. And what we're going to find out someday is, yeah, there's life. It's microbial life. What does that matter? Who cares? We want full flesh and blood, 20 foot tall or, you know, 6-inch tall aliens to prove that this all exists.
Yeah. Well, again, in my lifetime, I would love to get that proof. But again, what does constitute proof? We'll have to see. But I'm glad that there seems to be more openness, at least in Congress, about studying UAPs and getting at the bottom of this. We now, you know, everyone's got a high definition camera in their pocket, it seems, these days. So you would think, If these are alien craft that are visiting us on a regular basis, someone's going to get a really good shot at some point. But again, then people will say that it's CGI. So who knows?
Right. We just talked about this on the news show last week, right? I mean, we have these great high def 4K cameras. Now we capture something. It's obviously CGI because it's too clear. And what would you believe? And one of my own correspondents said, the more blurry it is, the more likely I'm to believe that that's real. We are a weird species. We'll be back. We've got David Barron in his book, The Martians, right after this.
Have you ever felt like something or someone was trying to tell you something? That inner nudge. That quiet whisper from the universe. With intuition sharpened by years of spiritual connection and a deep-rooted gift, Winnie Schrader delivers readings that are compassionate, insightful, and shockingly accurate. Whether you're facing a crossroads healing from heartache, or just curious what the cards reveal when he creates a safe. Sacred space to explore your journey. This isn't fortune cookie fluff. This is honest. Intuitive guidance from someone who's helped hundreds find clarity, closure, and confidence. If you've been waiting for a sign, this is it. Book your session now at lovelotustarot.com and take control of your journey. That's lovelotustarot.com. Winnie's sessions are personal, powerful, and often life-changing. That's lovelotustarot.com.
I'm excited, folks. We are less than a week away from the debut of the new TV series Paranormal Mysteries. The team behind The Holzer Files, Ghost of Devil's Perch, 28 Days Haunted. We're back together. Dave Schrader, Cindy Kaza, the medium, and tech guru Shane Pittman. We are back out investigating all new files of our own this time, coming September 26th to Beacon TV. Check out streambeacontv.com, and you'll be able to find out how you can watch the new series. It is a new 6-part series that will air every Friday night with our season finale, and it's a big one, on Halloween night this year. So I hope that you'll check that out. Again, it's called Paranormal Mysteries. And for those of you in Minnesota, I'm also extremely pleased to announce that The Outer Edge, which is a documentary film that I filmed in mostly in part, about 80% of it, right here in the great state of Minnesota, including some great Minnesota personalities like the one and only legendary Echo Bodine and Scott Walter, the Warren UFO, and more. It's part of this brand new documentary, which has been accepted to the Twin Cities Film Festival, and it will be airing with a red carpet premiere and a Q&A afterwards at the Twin Cities Film Festival on October, I believe it's 18th, Saturday the 18th, and tickets will be going on sale. Keep following my social media if you'd like to come on out and be a part of that screening and see the documentary for yourself and get a chance to meet and greet and talk. Just hit me up at any of my social media. When the tickets become available within about a week, I will let you know, and you can be part of that exclusive audience. I think there's less than 150 seats in the theater, and you'll be able to be a part of that. So check it out. The Outer Edge, coming your way on October 18th at the Twin Cities Film Festival. This evening, our guest is David Baron. He is the author of the new book, The Martians, The True Story of an Alien Craze That Captured Turn-of-the-Century America. The book is out and available now. Again, pick the book up, rate and review it. You guys are going to absolutely love this. David, when you're starting to research a book that goes back this far, what were some of the surprises that you uncovered? And did you go into it with one thought of, oh, let's talk about the craziness of this? And did you come out on the other side with a different feeling?
Well, to answer the second question first, yes. I mean, I went into this, again, I knew a little about the so-called canals on Mars, and to the extent it had been written about before, it's generally been written about as this great blunder in science. You know, that we went down this dead end for a while, looking for the civilization that didn't exist. And so I thought it was mostly about that. And it really surprised me the extent to which I found it an inspiring story. And just the genuine excitement that the public had at the time, and the genuine positive change that excitement caused in the 20th century in terms of science fiction and in terms of science. So that surprised me. In terms of what kind of a finding that surprised me, well, I always assumed that people would have been afraid of the Martians if they really believed they existed at the time, because the most famous piece of science fiction to come out of that era was H.G. Wells's book, The War of the Worlds, which, of course, was then famously adapted for radio in 1938 by Orson Welles and scared the bejesus out of a lot of people who thought the Martians really were invading. And so I thought, well, if the public thought there really was this civilization next door, you know, how worried were they? The answer is they weren't worried. As I said previously, the Martians, according to Percival Lowell's theory, were a highly advanced, moral, peaceful society. People were not afraid of the Martians coming here and invading. They, in fact, thought that the Martians could be our saviors, that if we could get in touch with the Martians, they would answer our deepest questions. So that was a huge surprise.
Makes you wonder, right? Are Martians looking at our planet going, I wonder if there's life on that planet. I wonder what it's like. And if they're intercepting our transmissions, are they getting Joel Osteen and religious, where they're like, look, those people are good, moralistic individuals that come together, you know, in a positive way? Or are they getting, you know, World War II movies and Vietnam movies or War of the Worlds that they're watching going, God, this is their thoughts about us? We're not going there. These people are nuts. It's got to be. I would love to be able to know what aliens do think of us if they exist.
Oh, yeah, they've got a lot of information that, at least those within, say, you know, 80 light years or so. But getting back to surprises. So again, in terms of the positive outcomes, we already talked about science fiction, but you know, how did we actually get into space? The father of American rocketry, Robert H. Goddard, he decided as a child to devote his life to seeing if we could actually, if he could create some kind of vehicle get to outer space, because as a child, he read The War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells. And in fact, I found this letter that Robert Goddard, as an older adult, wrote to H.G. Wells, thanking him for planting the seed of his life's passion because of, again, this work of imagination, this novel, The War of the Worlds, got a scientist to get us to space. The same is true, actually, in Germany, Wernher von Braun.
Right.
He built rockets for the Nazis, after the war, he came to the United States and built rockets for NASA. Wernher von Braun, as a child in Germany, got excited about outer space because he read Mars fiction in German that was also based on Percival Lowell's Canal Building Martians. So again, it was that excitement about Mars that in the end was wrong, but got something very right, which just spurred our passion for wanting to know what's out there and how we would get out there. So the very space program we have today, we can thank Percival Lowell for inspiring.
Listen, this is how weird we are as humanity, David. I read a book about Martians coming to our planet, decimating us, and I think, I got to build a rocket so we can visit those guys. Then you got people that are like, I read Percival Lowell's books. I want to see more. I want to meet aliens. It's weird how there's two different sides of the same coin, both with the same idea, but one inspired by something terrifying, the other inspired by something exciting.
But still, I mean, it in both the terrifying aspects and the inspiring aspects got us to think of ourselves not just as humans, but as earthlings, as beings on one planet in a larger solar system. We are part of a whole neighborhood. Who knows who else is out there in the neighborhood? And of course, it's not just our solar system. Now, scientists have found over 5,000 planets around other stars. We know that basically every star you see in the sky has its own solar system of planets. And some of those planets are probably habitable. Some are undoubtedly inhabited. So eventually, again, I know that perhaps many of your listeners believe we already have found the aliens. I can't say whether we have or haven't, but I have no doubt eventually we will get in contact with them.
And don't worry, friends, if you're listening out there in outer space, I'll bring my show to you as well. I'm willing to syndicate. We've got more to discuss. David Barron here, one more segment with us on your home for all things strange and unusual and wonderful. We are Paranormal 360. All right, David. Now that you've got the book out of your system, you've looked up these stories, uncovered a part of our forgotten past. Is there anything that has inspired you from this book to maybe reexamine with a new set of eyes on other concepts and beliefs that have been out there that maybe we've thrown away a little too quickly or dismissed?
That's a good question. I mean, there's so many things one could investigate. I do think, you know, you mentioned earlier the whole change in thinking about what causes ulcers. I mean, it's these transitions in scientific thought that really do make good stories. But it's going to take me a while to find the right one that I might want to write about. Writing a book takes a long time, at least the way I do it. This book took me 7 years, and in part because it just took a lot of work to do the historical research, to go through. I mean, I've got a filing cabinet filled with thousands of newspaper articles from the era about the Martians, and I've read them all and sorted through them all. But also I went through archives of the original correspondence of folks like H.G. Wells and Percival Lowell and scientists in Europe, going through handwritten letters from over 100 years ago. That takes a long time. So if I'm going to devote that kind of time to writing my next book, I need to make sure that it's a topic that I think will be interesting to readers and where there's really something new to say. So it's going to take me a while to figure out where I go next.
There's an interesting undercurrent of belief that aliens and the heavens, God, angels, that they may all be the same thing. It's up to the interpretation, right? Like the old famous story of the elephant parts, four blindfolded men, they bring an elephant in the room, each touches a different part of the elephant, each has a different experience and a different, one touches the leg. Oh, this is obviously a mighty oak tree, you know, tree stump. Somebody else feels the tail. Oh, I've got a very strong tethered hemp rope here. Another one feels the trunk and believes it's something else. Each person has a different view of the exact same item with limited scope. I think that's a fascinating element to how we look at so many different things. And there's so many different elements to our world that we have to open up our perspective to see. And imagination should not be just dismissed as something of childish fanfare, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's been said that, you know, if an advanced enough alien race came to Earth, how could we distinguish that from God? I mean, imagine if a human today brought modern technology to humans of, you know, 1492, it would be pure magic, right? The way we communicate with these devices in our pockets and the things we can do and the things we know, it would seem like pure, it would seem supernatural, not natural. How do you separate the supernatural from the natural? Maybe this, what we think of as supernatural is actually, I mean, it's natural. It's just, we don't understand how it works. So, I wish I were going to be around 100 or 200 years from now to know what life will be like then. And it would be nice if the aliens do land on the White House lawn and bring us their mobile phones. I'd be interested to see what their smartphones are like.
I don't think we're that far off. I don't think you're going to have to wait that long, David. I think that we are probably a lot closer if they exist. I think, you know, there's a big sect of people that believe that they are not going to let us destroy this planet. They are.
I hope that would be nice.
Step in. But isn't it interesting? In the 1980s, you have our two biggest superpowers, America and Russia, sit down, and Ronald Reagan and Mikhail Gorbachev have this discussion about aliens. And they're like, wouldn't it be fascinating how quickly our differences would subside when we realize just how small we are on the scope of everything. And the fact that, much like 9/11, the day after, a big portion of this world was America. They felt for us. They stood for us. They were one. And if all of a sudden, if these aliens, I don't think they need to interact. I don't think they need to come anal probe us. I don't think, I mean, unless that's what you're into, right? But I don't think that they need to do that. If they just showed up in the sky, how quickly would we pull back together and forget Democrat, Republican, Christianity, Judaism, Buddhism? How quickly would we just be humans?
Well, I think exploring astronomy, exploring what UAPs are, exploring the paranormal, getting outside of our daily lives, imagining, you know, clearly there's so much more to the universe than we possibly understand. And I think it's that humility is really important. And so much of the news is just about, you know, it's all about negative and outrage. You know, I think inspiring, as you do, wonder is a great thing. It's a very positive force. We should all be.
Hear that? A great question. And I'm inspiring people.
I'm all for investigating the unknown.
Yeah. What a remarkable world, man. That's the whole thing. When people ask me, why do you waste your time going after ghosts and Bigfoot and UFOs? To me, it's the last thing that's wasting my time, because I would much rather live in a world of magic where these things might exist than just know that every day I have to get up and take a shower and go to the bathroom and go to work and go to bed and start all over again tomorrow. I love the fact that there are things out there. And listen, we wouldn't be where we were, and we wouldn't have the advanced technologies we have if we weren't pushing beyond what we were told we could do. At one point, being able to run a mile in under 5 minutes, you're ridiculous. That's the stuff of science fiction, until it wasn't, until somebody broke that barrier, and then everybody broke the barrier, right? It's so interesting how, once we prove that something is possible, how quickly everybody else stumbles through that door and realizes that they can as well.
Yep. And I hope we'll get to Mars sometime soon. Elon Musk is trying. He says he might be ready to start sending material to Mars to get ready for people going to Mars as soon as late next year. I think that's probably pushing it. But if we don't get to Mars in the next decade, China may beat us to it. But I would love to see us start. I don't know that we're going to get a civilization on Mars anytime soon, but I'd love to start seeing humans on Mars exploring what's really there.
Sea monkeys. Let's begin with sea monkeys, David. That's the safest route for everybody. David, thank you so much for joining us tonight, opening our eyes, giving us a chance to re-explore a part of maybe history that a lot of people didn't even know existed.
It was a fun conversation. Thanks so much, Dave.
Thank you. All right, folks. From the triumph of headlines to the tragedy of ridicule, Percival Lowell's story is more than just the tale of mistaken astronomy. It's a mirror hold up to all of us. We project our hopes, our fears, and our ambitions onto the unknown. So whether it's the canals of Mars a century ago or the idea of a colony on Mars today, David Baron's The Martians reminds us that sometimes the pursuit of truth is less about the worlds that we're looking at and more about the world within ourselves. And I hope that the darkness of this world is just a little brighter with the knowledge and the imagination that we share here. I'll be back again with you next week.